whether general sports fans pay that much attention to this time of year, but I guess hockey fans do.
Oh yeah.
It is a, and especially this year, John, it's been quite chaotic. There's been a string of events that have come kind of one after another, but we went through the beginning of the free agent fracas yesterday. And that's what we're going to address today. Was it an eventful year? I would say no, but there were at least a few things that happened that people will be intrigued by.
I think there's a real hope with what we've seen the last few days that we're returning to normal, which is why I think that there's so much interest. I think the people are hoping to get to the arenas. I think that people are hoping their teams are improved and that we're going to be back to where we were 2 years ago before the pandemic. And I think that's why there's a perceived growth in interest in the game.
Kevin Paul DuPont of the Boston Globe, Mike Zeisberger of NHL.com will join us and we'll chat about it when the podcast continues after these messages. Well, the hockey season is over.
Yeah, right.
That other hockey season is now well underway, where we spend more time talking about it than during the regular season or the playoffs for that matter. Kevin Paul DuPont, Boston Globe is with us. Mike Zeisberger of NHL.com. Well, I guess it was a busy first day of free agency, but was it particularly impactful, eventful? DuPont, for you first.
Well, interesting. I don't know about impactful. Interesting moves, as always. That's nothing new. A whole lot of money spent, which I suppose that's an eye catcher given the flat cap and supposed economic restraint they're supposed to be showing. I don't find $9 million to Dougie Hamilton in the restraint category. And we can parse that out later. But overall, and on the parochial level here in Boston, they did go out and get 3 forwards, 2 defensemen, and a goalie. So I don't remember anyone going out and getting a six pack to plug in like that. And that said, most of them are B-listers. In some cases, overpaying in Boston, but that is, I say, the consequence of some bad drafting and also some a number of deadline moves the last 2-3 years that deplete the stock. At least they recognize that. They went out and got legitimate NHL bodies, as I say, most of them B-listers.
We keep hearing, Z, about economic restraint given the flat cap for the next couple of years. And yet, there's a lot of teams spending money. What should we make of this? Is this like this? We're at the cap. We gotta pull back. Is this all nonsense?
Well, I want to put something into perspective. I mean, people say that there was all this money spent. Was there really? Let think about something. And I know there wasn't a salary cap at the time, but 19 years ago, okay, the New York Rangers paid $9 million a year to get Bobby Holík. Bobby Holík and John's Maple Leafs were after him too. Bill Waters just couldn't pull the string on it. The Rangers outbid him. Now, if you look at that right now, Bob, and I understand there's a cap now, and I understand there's a flat cap, but Bobby Holík 19 years ago had a higher salary and a higher average annual value than Nathan MacKinnon, Landis Gogg, Sidney Crosby, Steven Stamkos, Victor Hedman, Nate MacKinnon. We can go down the list. So yeah, there was a lot of money spent yesterday, but was there really? I mean, the one albatross that I see, and Kev mentioned this, was Dougie Hamilton. And this is no offense to Dougie, but in my National Hockey League, Dougie Hamilton is not a $9 million defenseman. And I understand why the Devils did it. I just find that could be a deal that bites him in the you-know-what by the time it's done.
But I think to many people, just to combine both of your thoughts, there was a lot of money spent on guys that we were shocked they were going to get that money. You know, Blake Coleman was making $1.8 million in Tampa. Mm-hmm. He more than tripled his salary in Calgary. And if you're going to do that, you better be a top six forward. But I think what Blake Coleman has proven, in the particularly since his time in Tampa, that he's not a top six forward. He's a good third liner. Philip Deneau, who turned down an offer for Montreal at one point, boy, he got a lot of money in Los Angeles, $5.5 million a year. There is a lot of Jaden Schwartz in Seattle. Philip Grubauer in Seattle got a lot of money. That's the part that shocked me was by the way, the Bobby Hulig signing may be one of the reasons why that we do have a salary cap now.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I was just shocked at the amount of money for the quality of the players. And I think that's what everybody was shaking their head at.
What I was more shocked at, guys, is the fact that some of the term on these deals, 7-year deals, 8-year deals, and it wasn't that long ago, obviously before we got in the COVID world and obviously before the cap went flat, that the trend was 4 or 5 years. You were going out on a limb if you gave a guy 4 or 5 years. Mm-hmm. And now you're giving the Zach Hymans of the world. And I like Zach. I've watched him live a lot of times. This kid wears his heart on his sleeve. But 7-year deals for some of these guys, even a guy like Suter in Dallas. Okay, he's 36 years old. You give him a 4-year deal.
With a full no move clause.
Yeah. So and you know that curve, the level of playing curve is going to go down at any point now. So that's what surprised me more than the money that was thrown around, Bob, is to me some of the ridiculous term given to some of these players.
Well, is the Hamilton deal the most suspect of these? Kevin, you seem to think so, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm listening to these guys and both great points. And I guess, you know, it's a case of both of these are true, right? But both are true. And you know, they've rearranged the CBA now that there's sort of, pads in the gutters of the bowling alley. They can only hurt themselves so much. I also think that to a degree here, the figure $650 million is the guiding light. Even though, yes, there's the whole flat cap and $81.5 million, but when Seattle has forked out $650 million for an expansion franchise, that says to 31 other teams, at minimum, they've built in another $150 million in equity. Mm-hmm. So what looks like gigantic numbers to us, and in some cases they are, I think the Hamilton deal, it's not off the rails, but there's a premium there because Jersey has to pay extra to get people there now. And maybe forever because it's Jersey and it's Newark. I thought the Ovechkin deal was ridiculous in terms of, $50 million for a guy that age at this point. And I know he's an anomaly and a great player and all of that. I thought Suter was ridiculous money down in Dallas. But I do see value there. And again, with his age, if they're judicious about how they use him in terms of minutes and situations, they'll get decent value. That's not $8, $9, and $10 million. But those were the three that sort of stuck out in my mind.
You know, I don't profess to know the answer to this question, but it seems to me that it was not so many years ago that you had a bunch of teams that spent to the cap. You had a trickle of teams that were below the cap. And then you had a bunch of teams that had to spend like crazy to get to the floor. How many of those teams are left?
4 or 5.
To me, there's a lot more spending near the cap than there are teams trying to get to the floor.
I think there are, and Mike, you might know better, but I think there's right now there's about 4 or 5 teams that are still below the floor right now. And we'll have the summer to get to that point. It's certainly not what it used to be, Bob.
And what you're seeing now is some of these teams, like Arizona, they're taking, injured players, Chris Pronger, retired, you could say the last team that he was a member of, was the Arizona Coyotes because they take on some of these guys in trades that, let's face it, aren't going to play, get draft picks back for cap space. And that seems, Bob, to be the key word this year, at least, is cap space and cap flexibility. And that's what teams are doing. They'll say, look, you know, the teams that aren't spending to the cap, you know, like the Coyotes, they'll look and they'll say, look, we need to replenish our draft picks. Obviously, they were penalized by the league a couple of years ago for illegally testing some prospects that went against the NHL rules. So they got docked or had draft picks taken away. So they'll say, you know what, we'll take on the salaries that you don't want. Give us draft picks and back. So I think that is one of the things that has really look at Brent Seabrook. His rights got traded to Tampa Bay. He's never going to play again, but that gave him enough cap space because they can put him on long-term IR to give Braden Point, that contract at $9.5 million a year. And I will say, guys, that's a lot of money. I think there's a hell of a lot more value there. And I know they're just keeping their own guy, but to sign a legitimate, in my estimation, superstar Braden Point, than paying Dougie Hamilton, $500,000 less a year at $9 million. I know they play different positions. I know the Point has a better supporting cast, but if ever, in my estimation, if ever there, you know, somebody was worth that $9.5 million, Braden Point certainly was, and they couldn't have done it without taking on the rights to Brent Seabrook, who I said is never going to play another National Hockey League game again.
Well, just to you talked about Arizona, and I think we could put Buffalo in this group too. I mean, will Arizona win 15 games next year? Will Buffalo win 15 games next year? Their game plan is obviously now to look at the next two drafts and say maybe we're gonna go and build through the draft again and take another chance. Don't you think, Kevin?
I have no faith in either of them. I keep waiting to see what the grand design is, right? Usually you wait for the clouds to clear and you can say, okay, that's the path. But I don't, you know, in both cases, the franchises, the third sweater should be hazmat suits. It's just dreadful to watch and it's painful. I know the Buffalo market pretty well. They're they've got 50 years there. They're bought in and there's always going to be that faithful, I don't know, what is it, 4,000 or 5,000 season ticket holders? That's what happened here in Boston before the Thornton draft. So, but right now, the big deal in Buffalo is, will they keep Eichel or not? I mean, you have a franchise player and you can't sort of work around that even. So it both franchises, I really don't know. If I were just a fan wanting to buy into tickets, wanting to buy into the team, I don't see what it is.
Let's take the break. I want to talk about Eichel and what we all think might happen there. And, you know, Kevin, you raised the question of whether Buffalo keeps him. And we have to consider that. I think many people believe he's gone, but there's a chance he keeps him. And is that the worst idea? We'll talk about that when we come back after these messages. It's McCowan, it's Shannon with Kevin Paul DuPont, Mike Zeisberger, as we take a look at the early days of free agency in hockey in the offseason. There's no doubt that Jack Eichel is the carrot that is being dangled, or the biggest carrot that's being dangled out there, I guess. And I think most people can see that Buffalo would like to move him. I certainly believe that's the case. Well, let's start with this. Will they be able to move him? Or is there a perception that the ask is going to be too high? Z, to you first.
Well, first of all, rumors have it that Eichel yesterday was skating in Kev's backyard in Boston at the Bruins practice rink. But
keep a good sheet. Yeah.
Anybody can rent an hour, you know? I
mean, what, in Kev's backyard?
Sure.
That's tampering, Kevin.
Yeah, bring a lawnmower. Yeah.
But look, Bob, whatever deal the Buffalo Sabres make, they are not going to get the best player in the deal. It's as simple as that. And a lot of people judge, even with draft picks, that how do you evaluate a trade? Well, who got the best player? Well, Buffalo ain't going to be it. And I understand that they're asking a high price for this guy. This guy, you know, was a franchise player, albeit when the Sabres had the best odds to win the lottery and Edmonton ended up winning it, you know, there was a lot of disappointment that they didn't get McDavid among the fan base. And you know, you look at Eichel's numbers, you know, it's not like he hasn't produced, but
he hasn't made the people around it. But he had, Mike, I'm going to be the devil's advocate here. He hasn't made people around him produce either.
No.
I mean,
no,
when you look at Jeff Skinner, who has become a unmitigated disaster in Buffalo, even though he makes a lot of money, you look what was supposed to happen with Taylor Hall last year.
Yeah,
Jack. I mean, you talk about him being a franchise player. I'm starting to wonder about that now. He's getting paid franchise player money at $10 million. But I'm starting to wonder is what truly is his value. And that particularly with all the health issues with, you know, with the disc and the neck and what's going on there. So if I'm a general manager, Bob and I've talked about this before. If I'm a general manager, I'm just staying clear. That's the easiest thing. I'm staying away from this. I wouldn't touch this with a 10-foot pole.
Well, maybe I should correct the way I phrase that. He should be a franchise player given the talent that he has. But I agree, John, and sometimes that's a great point. And sometimes when you look at the body language on this kid, sometimes when you look at just his facial expressions, you know, I can see that it turns people off sometimes. You just wonder, you know, we've heard Anaheim. I really do think they need some kind of infusion there. I keep hearing about all these great kids that the Ducks have. Well, you know what? I think they're wasting a lot of the prime years of John Gibson, who I think is one of the best goalies in the league. And Minnesota, which didn't really have a wow factor for a long time. I mean, you know, they're said to be interested too. But, you know, it is proceed with caution because – you know, you get stuck with that tag, $10 million in a flat salary cap world. That's really, really hard to dig yourself out from.
I can just jump in here. You know, part of it is too perception going in. I mean, he came in as heralded as their next Gilles Perreault, right? So unfair from the start. 18, made captain very young. And also to go back, I think McDavid is a much better player, far faster, mesmerizing speed. What's Edmonton done in the same span, right? So, you know, guys, as we well
at least they made the playoffs.
I mean, they did, and then they got there and they couldn't score, right?
Yeah. Well, here's an interesting little fact. You know, McDavid and Eichel go 1-2 and John can correct me on the math here, but McDavid Eichel go 1-2 in the draft 1 year, and then Austin Matthews goes number one the next year. Those three guys combined have played on teams that have won one playoff series. Am I correct with that, John?
Yeah, that's right. McDavid, the Oilers won one series in San Jose. Yeah.
And Eichel and Matthews zip.
Yeah.
So, you know, we were throwing around the term franchise player, but maybe that's something to John's point. I mean, it's not basketball. One dominant guy
means nothing.
Two dominant guys cannot win you a title.
Yeah. It also underscores the obvious, because that's what I do, that when you're in a position to pick first, you finish dead. Typically you have finished dead last, unless you've made some really clever deal to, you know, pinch off the first one. But once you get into those bottom five teams in this league, it's a hard crawl back. No matter who you get McDavid, yeah. You get Dreisaitl as well. Still doesn't mean all that much. It takes a whole lot of drafting, financial discipline, intelligence and scouting. We know all of that. And I think if you look at those two organizations, you'd have questions about many of those factors beyond the easiest thing of all, which is to show up in the draft June 20 something or other, holding the first pick and say, yeah, I'll take the best guy.
Yeah, the other thing that jumps out at me, and you mentioned Minnesota, Mike, just and off the top of my head, I'm not sure that it doesn't sound like Billy Guerin's interested in Eichel anymore. He's opted out, or whether the price was too high. But I'm not sure you can bring Jack Eichel in and not have to pay Kaprizov a similar amount of money. And they have to sign him this summer. Otherwise, he's going back to the KHL. And let's face it, right now, Kaprizov is a much more influential player for a hockey club than Eichel is.
Right. And not a center.
Right. Yeah. And so you have to say, okay, listen, if I bring Eichel in, what do I do? How does that upset the balance of the roster that I have right now? You know, that's one of the amazing things about Boston, and you were talking about, they made six changes. So in comparing what Boston did after being eliminated in the playoffs way too early, in a lot of people's opinion, and what Toronto did yesterday, being eliminated in the playoffs far too early, the Toronto Maple Leafs couldn't do anything because of their four big players cost them so much. But look at the cost savings that the Bruins have around their big players. And it still gives Don Sweeney a tremendous amount of flexibility to go out and try to sign players. And that's something that if there's a new manager out there, if there's somebody doing a study, there's an amazing study of two franchises and what should do, what they should do, and what they need to do.
Well, I think Kev's Bruins had one of the best days of anybody. I know that, let me change that. One of the best weeks of any team in this league, because, what's the window? Bergeron's getting up there in age, Marshawn.
3 years max. The window's 3 years max.
I will remind you the obvious. We've been talking about that window for 10 years now.
Yeah, well.
they won the cup in 2011, and it's, this is a good lineup. Let's try to do it here. It's 10 years on now. So I would argue the window has essentially closed. The home run yesterday was a ground rule double in my estimation for the Bruins. They brought in a bunch of these infrastructure guys, all important, all underscoring the fact that their drafting hasn't been good and they've dealt away pieces to try to stay in the hunt every year because of the window. The home run would have been to have filched Braden Point from Tampa and paid him $9 million. That would have been the home run. And that would have changed everything John is talking about. But they don't do that. And you know what? I'm talking out my hat there to a degree, because there's no telling if he'd have taken the $9 million from Boston, right?
Well, it raises the issue of the Toronto Maple Leafs, and not to be
everything does
too local centric. But you point to, you guys have all pointed to the fact that Toronto Maple Leafs have four players being paid a whole crap load of money, and they have virtually no flexibility as a result of that, and they've had zero success. And they're not even trending up. I mean, the only thing that trended up was their performance during the regular season, which we all know is relatively inconsequential. When push came to shove, these guys couldn't beat the Montreal Canadiens after being up 3-1 in the first round. So, but there's no conversation about the Maple Leafs moving any one of their four big guys. We're talking about Buffalo moving their only player of any consequence.
That's because he's requested to be traded, Bob.
Well,
that's
why, fine, whatever.
He wants out. None of those other, the Leaf guys don't want out. This is playing in Mecca.
Well, why? Because they're getting paid. They're going to get paid this amount of money wherever they go.
They get treated like royalty by that organization.
Absolutely.
Bob, there is not one semblance of tough love in that organization.
Or accountability.
Should there be? Should the Toronto Maple Leafs be looking to move at least one of these guys? Nobody wants to answer.
Well, it's not simple, but the answer is that yes, they should. Yeah,
absolutely,
they should.
Yes.
They should.
Yeah, absolutely,
I think it's obvious, isn't it?
Yeah, but which one?
And yet, why is that conversation not at the forefront? Why do the Toronto Maple Leafs get away with being mediocre at best and with the decisions that this general manager has made, where they have four players at very high salaries,
$40 million total, yeah,
and cuffing the organization and no prospect of success? You cannot go into, no one will go into this season thinking this is the year of the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Well, in fact, Bob, in fact, if you look, now that we're going back to the old divisions, is Tampa better? Yes. Is Florida better?
Probably.
What about the Bruins? Are the Bruins better? Okay. So all of a sudden, the Maple Leafs are fourth in this division, where only three are, you know, really guaranteed a spot of being in the playoffs. Now, the Maple Leafs are now, in theory, fighting for a wild card in the Eastern Conference with this lineup. And that's the amazing thing. And then you throw in the Ottawa Senators, who, by the way, are the Ottawa Senators aren't at the floor yet. So they, you know, they're going to be doing something in order to try to get to the floor. All of a sudden the Maple Leafs are now in the same breath as the Ottawa Senators fighting for the fourth spot. And, you know, with Buffalo and Detroit are still learning how to win or trying not to win in one case. So the Maple Leafs are, this is not the team that, in the position that I think that people at Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment expected to be at.
No,
Bob,
but
you mentioned something about, you know, there being, how did they get away with it? I don't think that they are in this market. And John can speak to this point, but it has been a long time. And look, I mean, you know, three of the four of us have spent enough time in this market to know there's been plenty of reason for people to bitch and whine. I mean, this franchise has given them plenty of reason to do that. But the venom that I've seen from the fans, the disgust, the anger, at Maple Leafs management, specifically Kyle Dubas, and even Brendan Shanahan, who has kind of been, you know, he's kind of been untouchable throughout this whole thing. But the public outcry and the accruing frustration, I haven't seen this in a long time. I mean, there is pure...
Yeah, who cares? You know what, Z, I don't care about those kinds of people, because those are the same kinds of people that clapped their hands, jumped up and down when they signed Tavares to an $11 million contract,
yeah,
and Austin Matthews and everybody else. They love it when you sign the big name guy, and then they're the first to bitch and complain when the process doesn't work out.
But I would say, Bob, like those two guys are walking the plank. I mean, if
well, they're not walking it today.
I think they're gone.
Well,
they are going to get one more kick at the can, Bob. That's the reality. They
why?
Are going
to. Why? Based on what?
Well, I mean, obviously that their feel of transparency of being open. And listen, and I'm not defending Kyle.
You're not answering the question. Why are they being given another chance?
Because I think obviously ownership thinks that they're on the right path.
Well, ownership is stupid. We acknowledge that.
Okay, there you go. So now we figured that out.
A bunch of broadcasters and a rich guy.
We figured that out now. But I mean, when you take a look at what Kyle tried to do at the trade deadline, it wasn't for him sitting there saying, okay, we're set. He actually, in my opinion, it's the subjectivity of how he does the job that has to be challenged now. And was the timing right? Was the decision on the Foligno trade the right thing? I mean, those are the real challenges. And history will tell us now the Foligno deal was a bad deal.
The Foligno deal had no impact on what happened in the postseason. You know, he was a B-list player at this point. I love the guy, but I mean, he's a B-list guy. His impact was going to be negligible. At the end of the day, you got four guys you're paying a crap load of money to, and they didn't perform. And management continues to keep their jobs. Right. And worse than that, they keep following the same path over and over again, as if they're so committed to the decisions that they made 3 and 4 years ago that they can't realize that those were the wrong decisions. And if that's the case, somebody's got to stand up, whether it's the president of the club or the ownership or whatever, and say, hold on, you guys tried this. That's nice. You failed, and you failed miserably. Mm-hmm. You failed colossally. So either you come up with a new plan or I will find someone who will.
I totally agree. If they're paying four forwards as their franchise players, right? Yep. What's the average, Z? $10 million?
Yep.
If I'm going to pay four, here's an easy formula, guys. If I'm paying four franchise players, make one of them a defenseman and one of them a goaltender. And the Buffalo model of years ago that worked pretty well was they had one franchise player in Dominik Hasek, and that was enough. Yep. Meanwhile, these guys in Toronto, it's a clown show. And I'll tell you where the clown show exists. It exists in error one, management falling in love with players. Fatal mistake. When you fall in love with the player, you're halfway out the door. The other co-enabling factor is fans have fallen in love with the players.
Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm. Right? So you've got these two giant love affairs going on. And then Z points out very aptly, who's mad at who there? The fans at management. That doesn't change shit all. That changes nothing.
Meanwhile.
So they wake up every morning and shoot themselves in another foot. That's what they've got here. You know, what they should have been trying to do was move Tavares off the books for 50 cents on the dollar. Yes. Find a taker, you pick up $5 million there, and then you make a great trade with Nylander. And somewhere out of all that cap savings, you get yourself a franchise goaltender.
Meanwhile, and those are great points, Kev, you go to New York Islanders.
Okay. You do what?
Lou, you go to the Islanders where Lou wasn't obviously, hey, we got to move away. We got to move on from Lou. Okay. Lou goes to the island after, you know, he doesn't want to be an advisor to Kyle.
Well, would you wanted to be an advisor?
No, not at all. Not at all. Goes to the island. One of the first things that happens is he loses his franchise captain.
That's the question.
To the team that he left. And right now in the 3 years, in terms of playoff series one, New York Islanders 6, Toronto Maple Leafs 0. So, you know, people can make all the excuses that they want of why that happened. But at what point do you look and look at Lou Lamoriello has some rough edges. We all know that. But when you see what this guy has done on the island with what I would say is less raw talent than the Toronto Maple Leafs have on their roster.
Much less.
Don't the question marks have to come up now?
Well, why? That's my whole point, Z. I mean, why not? Why is it in this? Now you have, okay, essentially the Mrazek-Anderson thing is the only thing that's really relevant over the last couple of days. It's like a trade. It's really like a trade. Toronto wanted Mrazek. Well, they didn't want to pay Anderson. And Carolina says, okay, we'll take Anderson. We don't mind paying. Who's the better goaltender?
Well, the problem is that neither are what Kevin defines as a franchise goaltender.
Well, I get that.
There aren't many of those. There aren't many.
No, but I'll tell you what.
Well, wait a second. There was one guy, and I know he's 37 years old. But Fleury got traded. The Vezina Trophy winner got traded from Vegas to Chicago a few days ago.
Yeah, but the Leafs couldn't take that cap space.
Why?
Well, you know why.
Yeah, because they fell in love.
Yeah, but to go back to the Islanders, I mean that the key thing there is that they have two valuable goaltenders, that are better than anybody else Toronto has. Or Carolina, for that matter.
Just interject really quick. To Bob's point, okay, and we've been talking about Lou. Do those four guys get the contracts that they have right now if Lou Lamoriello was running the Toronto Maple Leafs?
Well, we know the answer to that.
We all know the answer to that.
There's not a chance in hell.
No, I to be the devil's advocate, Tavares would have gotten his deal. Because Tavares would have gotten his deal. He would have.
That would have been a mistake on Lou's part.
And let's face it, that was the domino that started all of this, because as soon as you sign Tavares to that deal, what does Matthews make? What does Marner make? And then the Nylander, listen, the management of the Nylander holdout to basically, in the end,
that was a joke. That was
and then pay him exactly close to what he wants. Gosh, it really puts a bad light on things.
If you take his contract, and I forget what it is, it's around 7, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Take that contract and dangle it in front of the Vegas Golden Knights, and maybe you got Fleury. You know, I mean, the math doesn't work that way, but they couldn't, as a team that has to win now, I think we all agree with that, the Toronto Maple Leafs, a 37-year-old goaltender with 1 year left on his deal or whatever it is, Fleury, one year. At around $7 million is a perfect fit. It's a perfect fit. And they couldn't do anything about it because they already, like a magician, had handcuffed themselves behind their own back. They couldn't move on that deal. They had no way to execute it.
But I think there's deeper roster flaws than just goaltending, Bob.
Sure.
You look at the lack of depth up front after the top four guys.
Well, but that's why, though. Startling. Z, if you spend $40 million, if you spend half the cap on four forwards, and you got to have a couple of decent defensemen, and you want a goaltender, and you want support for those four forwards, well, that's $160 million. Good luck. Mm-hmm.
And did we mention that Morgan Riley's contract's coming up in a year, and that he's going to look at
Seth Jones's deal?
Look at Seth Jones's deal. Look at Dougie Hamilton's deal. Look at a few other deals. Then say, well, I may not be $9 million, but I'm $7.5 million.
Mm-hmm. Right.
This organization is going to do what other failed organizations have done in the past, and Buffalo might be among them. They're going to wind up trading their best assets too late, when those assets no longer have tangible value. And Buffalo at least has only got one they got to figure out.
Okay. I know. So actually with that in mind, with that statement in mind, Bob, that almost makes you justify trading Marc-Andre Fleury out of Vegas.
Meaning what?
Well, they mean they got something, you know, they solved their cap issues. They still have a goaltender that it doesn't get paid as much. And, you know, Marc-Andre Fleury's off the books and he's gone to Chicago.
I'm not arguing it from a Vegas perspective. I understand why Vegas did it.
Yeah.
All I'm saying is hypothetically, what the Toronto Maple Leafs, and this is to Kevin's point, you know, you start with a goaltender. If you haven't got a goaltender, you're going anywhere.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. And here was a goaltender who was available, who is a frontline goaltender, who's won a bunch of cups, been to a bunch of finals, just won the Vezina. Is 37, but still got a little gas in the tank. Maple Leafs couldn't play in that arena. And instead they got Peter Mrazek, who played how many games last year?
25. Oh, yeah, he was hurt most. That's the problem. Mrazek and Campbell, it'll be interesting to see if they can get to 82 games between the two of them. So
Campbell was barely a backup last year and out of emergency became the number one goaltender. Mm. What do you think he is next year?
Kev's trying to stay awake because there's so much Toronto Maple Leafs talk.
No. It underscores everything I've been saying. I mean,
it does. This is how we got to it, is it speaks to what Kevin was talking about earlier.
Exactly. I'm sure, you know, adding to your Fleury point, that would be a difficult trade for, as much as I like Fleury and the Toronto need and all of it, the disparity in their ages there would be really, really hard for me to get into that trade. But I get the central point. Adding to your point, Bob, is the fact that Vegas wanted to move him last summer and couldn't.
That's right.
So, you know, he's they get to a certain age and people start dialing down on the magical analytics and the rest of it.
Oh, I get it.
But Fleury is, you know, which again is part of why Toronto is doomed. I mean, the analytics should go right next to birth date, weight and height, you know, all good and interesting, right? Doesn't mean he can play. Doesn't mean 6'4", 210D is going to be where he has to be when it's the right play, right time to be, right? all of that is you get your ass to the front of the net and stop the goal, right?
Conversely, it doesn't mean you can't play.
Yeah. Well, that's right.
Vegas would have traded. You're right. Vegas would have traded Fleury last year, and the guy went on and won the Vezina. And correct. They probably should have been a Stanley Cup final team. But anyway.
Well, they had let's face it. They weren't in the Stanley Cup final because they were a cap team that, in fact, as the season wore down, had to play with less than the full roster at times because of the cap issues they had. And by the time they got to the third round, all of their stars were exhausted, and they couldn't even skate on the ice up and down properly.
Yeah, they
that was and they could and the scoring suffered more than anything else. Wasn't the goaltending that killed them, although the one play by Fleury didn't help.
Yeah, but we keep going back to that one play, and he got benched as a result of it, which I think was like berserk. Oh, no.
Of course, you know, it was.
Okay, it was a stupid thing to do, but it was one. I mean, the whole body of work during the postseason, Fleury was pretty damn good. You know,
Who's the last Leaf goalie who would have won with this bunch in front of him?
Eddie Belfour.
Yeah. Eddie Belfour.
Yeah.
That's a ways back.
Early 2000s, right?
Well, Kev, you say that's a ways back. He's the last goalie to win a playoff series for the Toronto Maple Leafs, which, by the way, occurred at a time where they still use the center ice red line for two-line passes.
And I last I checked, there wasn't a salary cap. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I say bring the two-line pass back, offside back. That's what's really holding the Maple Leafs. Yeah.
Bring back obstruction, Bob. Oh, wait a minute.
Eddie Belfour might still be the better choice right now.
What's he doing these days?
He's fixing his cars. Just fixing cars. Having a good time.
I don't know. Maybe he's not too old.
Meanwhile, you know, Jack Campbell has this kind of Cinderella season last year, and everybody kind of fell in love with him. What happened in Game 7? The Habs open the scoring with a shot from the top of the circle that goes through the 5-hole.
Yeah.
Okay. What happened to Jack Campbell is exactly what fans and media have been whining about Fred Anderson for a long time. He's great in the regular season. Maybe it's a reflection of the whole team. Oh, he's been great for the entire season or very good, but he can't win the big game. Yeah. Well, did Jack Campbell win the big game? And I'm not putting that all on Jack Campbell. But there was an odor on that first Montreal goal in Game 7, which certainly moved the stick and changed momentum in that game. So, you know, we keep going in circles about the goalie thing, but, you know, that's why I see there a lot of doubt in Toronto's goal.
Hey, whatever city in the NHL you're listening to this podcast on, that becomes the topic of conversation all the time.
Yes.
I mean, look at the people in Edmonton, and right now it's Mike Smith and Mikko Koskinen, and they are trying their damnedest not to make sure that that's the case there. You know, Vancouver's got Thatcher Demko, but you know who's going to help back up, and can Demko carry an 82 game schedule? There's lots of questions across the country, maybe except for Winnipeg, where Connor Hellebuck is still supposed to be one of the best goalies. And didn't have a great season. And Montreal, where is Carey healthy enough? Is he going to be healthy enough to start the season? So there's goaltending question. I mean, look at Boston, Kevin. I mean, if I had told you that Linus Allmark's going to be your starting goalie next year, would you have believed me?
No. And there's a pile up of consequences why that is, right?
Yeah.
With Rask surgery and a rookie goal. The other point, I think, an important point to make about goaltending is, let's not forget, Fleury had a couple of stinkers in the playoffs this year that got him hooked, right? What it comes down to is team belief in the guy who's in there. They're all, you know, that one early Z where it goes through the 5-hole. If you've got a team that believes, listen, that's an anomaly, I know he'll shut it down from here. We'll persevere. We'll motor on. But it's goaltenders like that that all of a sudden that easy one goes in. And the rest of the team is saying, oh, God, what do we got here now? Right.
So we go again.
Right. You've got to have a goaltender that they're all going to have bad nights. They're all going to have a bad week to a month. But you got to have a guy in there that the rest of the unit truly has faith in. They might not even like him. You know, as we know, there's been some irascible goaltender. Billy Smith wasn't all that well liked in the room, but he had it. He had it start to finish all
the
time.
Just stop the puck, baby. Just stop the puck.
Right. And make me believe you will.
Guys, we could go on and on, but we won't.
And we did.
But we'll let you go at this point in time. We have solved and accomplished absolutely nothing, as per usual.
That is what we do here.
However, that is exactly what we do, and we will continue to do it as long as the creek don't rise. Mr. DuPont, Mr. Zeisberger, thank you both for your participation as always. We enjoy it, and we'll call on you again somewhere down the road. All the best.
All the best, guys. Thanks for having us.
We'll be back after these messages. So again, our thanks to DuPont and Zeisberger for being with us. I'm not sure we analyzed anything. I'm not sure we came to any direct conclusions other than on the Toronto Maple Leafs. And we probably shouldn't have gone down that road, given that we knew they weren't going to be able to do anything, and they didn't do anything. They essentially traded Mrazek for Anderson. Mm. I know it wasn't a trade, but that's really what they did. And I don't think we're going to get bent out of shape over that. They're banking on Campbell being their number one goaltender. Maybe he will be.
I'm sure the Maple Leafs know they need to be better, and particularly in their forwards, their bottom six. And then they've got some cap challenges over the next couple of years with guys like Morgan Rielly. That's the reality of what's going on in Toronto.
But there sounds like there's no intent on trading anybody of consequence here.
Well, no, I think Kyle has already said that we're going to stick with this group. We're going to give them one more chance, and we believe in them, and we're going to move on.
So if they do what they've done for the last 4 years, who goes first, the players or the general manager?
I think this management team has one more year to prove that they have a plan that works, a blueprint that is effective. And I quite frankly, you know, having not talked to them, but I guarantee you that they know that too, that they've been given one last opportunity to make this a championship team. Let alone win a playoff series.
Would you give him that year?
I would. Yeah, I would. But I'm a softy. You know that, Bob. I'm a softy.
More hockey talk tomorrow. The commissioner of the National Hockey League, Gary Bettman, will join us, although our conversation will not dwell on the Toronto Maple Leafs or their their woes, but rather the future of the game and the Olympics and a bunch of other stuff. So Gary Bettman tomorrow, we hope you'll come back for that episode. We thank you for watching or listening. For John Shannon, Bob McCowan. See ya.